Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, automotive and muscle car enthusiasts all over the planet Earth, you've done it again. You resisted the urge, but you pushed the play button on yet another...
Kevin, another revolutionary episode of V8 Radio.
What a fitting word. Revolutionary episode of V8 Radio. Right on. This is the V8 Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Oostie, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Hubal-Clark.
And how are we today, sir?
Well, we are great, and it's going to get even greater because we've got a very special guest, our good friend from the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals, Mr. Bob Ashton. Bob, welcome.
Thanks for having me. This is always fun.
So is the McCacken Show.
That's what it's all about.
That's for sure. All right. Well, this is an exciting episode. I'm looking forward to hearing the updates. But before we get into all that, for those who frequently listen to the V8 Radio Podcast, you know that we start every episode with some kind of an automotive trivia question in which we ask the questions at the beginning of the show and then answer them at the end. It's our way of a podcast bait and switch to get people to stay tuned the whole time. So, Bob, were you warned of this? Have you, in fact, prepared a trivia question?
I think I've got something I can throw out there.
I'm kind of sure you do. All right. Well, you go first because we're gracious hosts. We let our guests go first.
Okay. Well, let me throw this out there. You guys might know the answer, but I don't know how many other people do. So the question is, Muscle Car and Corvette National Show was started in 2009 by a group of like-minded enthusiasts. That group is made up of a bunch of guys, and they come from all across the United States. Who can tell us how many different states the McCacken members hail from?
Ooh. Great question. Great question. Mike, because I'm generous, I'll let you go first.
Right on. You're so gracious. You're
wonderful. I'm just full of gratitude and grace tonight.
I swear to Lord, oh, baby. Okay. So how many states are our McCacken members from? I'll just throw a number out there. I know one of them is California, and of course I know the other one is Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to say a total of 5 states for our McCacken royalty.
Okay.
Wow. That's a good guess there, Cue Ball. I'm going to say that in the beginning and probably still today, if I'm not ignorant, there are 8 partners, right?
That is correct. There are 8 partners.
So there's a bonus, man. All right. So of the 8,
right.
I also know of at least 5 states, and I'm guessing there's more than that. So I'm going to say that there are 7 states for the 8. I'm going to say 2 people are in the same state.
Okay.
Great guess.
Great question.
Yeah, right on.
So we'll find out at the end of the show. Mr. Cue Ball, have you prepared a trivia question?
As per usual, sir. So here we go. Okay. What was the VW Beetle called when it was initially imported into the United States?
Junk.
Whoa.
Bob, since you are our guest, I'll let you go first. Yikes. Rough crowd.
I'm going to throw out Kubelwagen.
Ooh, the Kubelwagen.
Kubelwagen.
Klubewagen?
Kubel, K-U-B-E-L. Great guess.
Kubelwagen.
All right. What does Kubel mean?
Well, a Kubelwagen is a wagon that is full of Kubels.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm going to say that there were a faction of those who resisted the import of the VW in the beginning at that time period because they didn't understand, you know, this was, a very Americentric time period and imports had to people over right away. So, but as far as what VW called it, I don't remember. I know it was the Kubelwagen, I think, is a great guess, could be the right answer. The VW, I don't know, man.
I just want to know if Americentric is a real word.
It is today.
Ooh, I like that. That was impressive.
That wow. Might be our next overselling adjective.
I like that.
Yeah, it could be. Kubelwagen, I think that's going to be very similar to what my guess is. Volkswagen means people's car. The whole thing was supposed to be the people's car. It was not the Beetle. I think that happened later. Mm-hmm. So Type 1, was it the VW Type 1? Because I know there was a Type 2. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to say that.
Kevin says Type 1. All right. Duly noted. And we'll find out at the end of the show.
All right. Well, keeping on our theme of muscle car questions here for
this was a show to break out some Corvette trivia. Son of a gun.
There you go.
I have another one. So this is an interesting three-part question. I'm going to throw out three car names, and you guys just have to say who made each one, right? Who were the manufacturers of the following three cars? The Lynx, the Minx, and the Manx.
Well.
So who made the Lynx, who made the Minx, and who made the Manx?
Well, I know two out of three.
Bingo. There you go. What do you got?
Obviously, the Lynx was made by Mercury, and the Manx was made by Myers. But the Minx? You got me on that one, Kevin. Mm-hmm.
Well, you got to throw a guess out there, man.
I am stumped on Minx.
Well, in typical fashion, what we do here when we're stumped is just we follow the MSU clause, which is make S up. So take your best wag.
Well, then, it would have to be... Plymouth.
There we go. His guess is a Plymouth Minx. And you know what?
Plymouth Minx.
You may be right. It's got a ring to it.
All right. Then
Q, what do you got?
Agree with Bob with the Lynx is the Mercury Lynx and the Manx being the Myers Manx. But the Minx, that is a sticky one. I am going to say... The Minx.
Nobody likes a sticky Minx, by the way.
Nobody. All right. The Minx. That came from our friends at Studebaker. Mm-hmm. The Studebaker Minx.
All right.
Okay.
As Bob chortles in disapproval, by the way.
Story of my life. What can I tell you?
South Bend buddies are rolling over.
Yeah.
That's it.
Like, we're never listening to this show again.
Bob told us to listen, and big mistake.
And this cue ball guy, I don't know what his deal is.
Yeah. Those are great, great answers. Duly noted. We will find out the correct answer at the end of the show. So there you go.
Right on.
All right. So as we record this, we are in the beginning of October of 23, which means the preparations for the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals show are in full swing. What's your daily like these days, Bob, as we prepare for the 23 show?
Well, like you said, it's the beginning of October, but it feels like it's the beginning of November. We've got so much going on this year. I mean, as you guys know, we like to rotate between the big three as far as the what's become known as the red carpet display, which is kind of what welcomes you when you come down the steps at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center. And this year, the spotlight falls on Ford and Mercury. So I can tell you, we have got more Ford and Mercury participation this year than we've ever had by a long shot. And it's just a fantastic lineup. Just really, really exciting.
That is great.
It is great. The Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals, I maintain, it's the best muscle car show in the world by far. And it to me, it's also the best indoor car show. And the reason for that is the thought that goes into the displays. Everything's got a context, and you might not know what that is until you get up close and start to kind of put the pieces together. And this red carpet that Bob's talking about, you show up, you know, the venue is, it's technically basically Chicago, Rosemont, Illinois, and you go through the big glass doors and this amazing lineup, it's like Fantasy Island. It just unrolls in front of you, right? And you've done some displays in the past that have been just truly mind-bending for muscle car fanatics, with all the Hemi e-body convertibles probably being the pinnacle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
and this year being Ford and Mercury. So now are we at liberty to say, like, what genres of Ford Mercury? Are we talking Mustang to full size, or where are we at on these?
Well, for the show overall, the answer to that question is yes. For the red carpet display, we're calling it Who's the Boss, but what I want to clarify is it's actually not just Boss Mustangs. And, of course, we will have some really outstanding Boss 302s, Boss 351s, and Boss 429s, but we've got some really unique things added to the mix. And, you know, one of the things that I'm really excited about, we have a gentleman coming from the state of Washington that has a Can-Am car that was powered by a Boss 429 and formerly driven by Mario Andretti. So it's like,
wow,
something I didn't even know existed.
Holy cow.
You know, so I've seen that car, and I actually interviewed Mario Andretti at SEMA a few years ago about that car and that engine. And I should get this to you. It's easy to find. If you go on YouTube and look up Magnaflow Mario Andretti V8 TV, you'll probably find the interview. And what the context was... A guy named Bodie Stroud, who builds customs, built a Boss 429 Mustang, and it has Mario's old engine in it. And Mario was at Magnaflow that year, and the car was in the Magnaflow booth. And I asked Mario, I'm like, so you've got experience with this? He's like, yeah, I raced that engine, and it was insane.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, this was one of those, it was one of the random calls that I get that, you know, it's kind of like, sets my day off in the right way. This gentleman had called me up. He was referred to me by a past participant, and he said, you know, my buddy's been telling me I just have to go to the show. I've got a couple cars that you may be interested in, but they're a little bit different. Okay, you know, and I hear that pretty often, so you never know whether it's going to be something that's really a treasure or whether it's going to be something that maybe not isn't quite so exciting. But so he tells me that he's got a car that's quite interesting and would fit into our Better Ideas Ford Mercury display. It goes on to tell me about a special dealer-built Cobra Jet Ranchero, 1969. And it was actually like a dealer-zone type thing, kind of like a Yenko or a Nikki type conversion with some special one-off features. And this particular Ranchero was special ordered to be his wife's demo. So it has a laundry list of unusual features. You know, again, a true one-of-one car or truck.
Truck. Yeah, that is awesome.
Is it a truck?
Is it a car? Yeah. Is it a truck? That'd be a good trivia question.
Yeah, it depends on how you're using it on that particular Wednesday.
Yeah, right on.
And to clarify, going back to that Mario story, I think there was two of those race cars done, and the engine out of the one is probably still in the one that's going to be at McCacken, and the other one is what Bodie Stroud had, but it'll be interesting to find out. So the great thing about the McCacken show, you know, of course, the acronym is not the great thing. The McCacken acronym is kind of challenging, but you knew that. But, you know, of course, it stands for Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals, and I maintain that it is absolutely the best muscle car show in the world, bar none. And it's also like my favorite indoor car show of any kind. And the reason for it is these cars, you can go to a lot of different shows and see really nice cars, really over the top, you know, customs and Riddler cars and all that kind of stuff. But the stuff at the McCacken show is unique because these are American cars that are pedigreed with stories that rival, you know, legendary Ferraris and you know, marks that have legit authenticity. And that, it blows my mind how you're able to put this type of show together year after year and raise the bar every time.
Well, and I have to credit my partners with that also, because I think that the one unique thing that makes our show is the fact that the eight of us all have different interests and different backgrounds. So for me, as a managing member, it opens a lot of doors to give me access to people that I otherwise probably hang up on the phone or delete my emails. But
you know, by when we do our special displays, we always look at that and say, okay, which one of you guys know somebody who has a DT40 that I can call on, or who do you know that has a, you know, a special Copo Camaro or whatever the case may be. And because of the diversity of the members, that's really what allows us to continue to do this now, you know, going into our 15th year.
It must be from all the different states that they're from.
That could be. Very well could be.
Well, talk about a Rolodex of contacts in the car world. I mean, those guys, it's unreal.
It really is. And, you know, we've all been into this for a long time. And as I say, we're not your typical promoters in that we're all enthusiasts and, you know, with different interests. And, you know, literally, I'm looking at our new magazine now, which I just got in my hands. I'm really excited about.
Cool.
And, you know, I talk about the fact that we all race, we show, we do power tour, we do various tours of different types of racing, we autocross. So we all are really hands-on type of people. And, you know, I think that's what makes the difference. We understand the amount of work that it takes for our participants and the amount of the investment that it takes to, you know, ship a car across the country and the amount of time, taking time off of work and whatnot. We have a real appreciation for our participants and do our very best to always make sure that we accommodate everybody the best way we can. And not only the participants, but also the spectators. And that's really important. I think we try to go above and beyond to make sure that everybody has a hotel to stay at and they have comfortable places to go eat after hours and, you know, family things going on if they don't want to stay at the show and spend 18 hours at the show like you and I do. There's a lot of opportunities for different types of entertainment in the area also. It's really, really a neat program all around for the whole family.
It is. And when you say accommodating, your event is also one of, if not the smoothest one to get in and out of as somebody who is displaying a car. I've been fortunate enough to, not only attend the show, but also work with you as, in an MC capacity, pulling covers off, and Mike has helped with that too over the years, but also to exhibit cars and show some cars there. And it's just like, you know, it's in and out and it's, everybody cares and you're not getting yelled at and it's not high stress. And it's, you got a lot to do in a very short period of time. So it's not like everybody's loafing and a cakewalk, but it's very purposeful. And it's not a detractor. Nobody says, oh, I'm not going to that show because it was a pain in the ass to get in. It works very well. So my kudos to the whole team there for that.
Well, thank you. And as you say, it is a team. And I think that many being past participants, I think we get a different perspective. And these guys understand what it takes. And I always stress the fact that, you know, these people, they may be coming in after towing across the country and, you know, dealing with traffic and everything, but I don't care whether they've got an average car that may seem common at our show anyway, or a multi-million dollar car and a trailer. We need to thank them and give them a good warm welcome and make sure that the questions they have are all answered. And, I always say we never want to leave anybody with an unanswered question. So if our staff member gets a question and they don't know, I say, you don't stop until you find somebody who has the answer.
Nice. That's great. I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
because you know how it is. Yeah, I don't know, man. Well, who would know?
It's not my job, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, and we do a lot of events, as you guys do, too. And you know, I observe. You know, my son always gets a kick out of that. You know, we go on power tour every year. You know, I'm writing notes and stuff. What are you doing? And it's like, well, you know, hey, I saw this and it was really a great idea. Or I saw this and these guys really screwed up. Let's make sure we don't do that, you know.
Right.
So I think that's part of being a participant in events also, instead of just being a promoter. And, always a work in progress, I say. I tell all my staff members, it's always a work in progress. And we always have to keep an open mind to improve.
Yeah. Well, we touched on some of the Ford stuff. You always are agnostic when it comes to makes and models. So what else can we look forward to in some of your featured invitationals this year?
Well, a couple of things, you know, I say that often. There's a couple of things I'm really excited about, but it's true. One of our displays is put together by Dr. Adesh Parikh, who is our viewing guy.
Heck yeah.
And Jess just does a phenomenal job year after year at putting together these Buick displays. So this is something he's been working on for a couple of years because it is such a big challenge. But he's got 15 big body Buick muscle cars coming in here from all across the country. By big body, we do have some Riviera GSs in there. We've got the Sabres and Wildcats, and most of them are multi-carb four-speed.
Oh, boy.
Well, we know where Kevin's going to be.
Oh, yeah, I'll be stuck in that display intentionally for a lot of the time, for sure.
It is. You know, we've over the years, we've had a few of them, you know, a few of the big body Buicks. And, you know, you guys know I'm really big into those cars, all big body muscles, no matter whether it's a Mopar or Buick or Chevy. I just love those cars. I think they're really neat. So I'm always on the lookout. But and with that being said, you know, showing a diversity of the show, we're also doing an evolution of the performance Impala display. And this one's, sadly, is dedicated to a good friend of mine that we just lost recently, Tom Dietz, who is like Mr. Impala. Mm. Yeah. He was working with me directly to coordinate this display, and he sadly passed, but we are dedicating the display to him. And in fact, we'll have one of his cars. He's got a 62409 anniversary Impala. It'll be featured in the middle of the display.
Wow.
But we start out right now 59 and going up to 69. Still looking for the perfect 58. So if you guys know one out there, it's got to have a performance twist. But kind of showing the timeline and the differences between the year-to-year performance models. So for instance, our got a 60 348 tri-power four-speed car. We've got a 63 Z11 in there. Just hard tops and convertibles. Just a really, really neat, diverse group of big body Chevys. It's just so neat to see the evolution of those cars, starting out with the you know, the 58 and ending up with the 69 SS427. It's just to be able to see them side by side, also you can see the differences in the model years. You know, back when cars used to change nearly every year, so I'm pretty excited about that one too.
Now, one of the things I wanted to chat with you about was pinging off last year, and you know, we've been talking about some classic muscle cars and big body stuff. But last year you did the Malaise era display, and I walked around and shot a video of that, just walk and talk. And it has been so insanely popular because a whole generation of people of a different age grew up with those cars. Are we going to see any more of that kind of stuff? And tell us about how that one came together, because that was a pretty wild display.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was something that, you know, we're always looking at trying to draw some younger people into the mix. And as you can see, by looking at auction results and sales results, it's those cars are coming on strong. You know, in the Malaise area, we'll call that 1973 to, I kind of stretch it to 87, but it really is 73 to say 77 or so. But we are going to do something, kind of a twist on what we did last year, and just dedicate the display to the General Motors Colonnade cars. 77 era. Of course, that includes the Hurst Olds, so that's, you know, kind of special, I think. And, you know, Laguna. We've even got a Motion 454 Chevelle, you know, real deal, unrestored original in Mexico. You know, once again, showing performance wasn't necessarily dead by that time. It was, might have been a little harder to find, but wasn't dead.
You know, what's interesting is, as time goes by and I get a chance to talk to younger people about this stuff, a lot of them don't have any idea that what we would call the high performance cars went away in the 70s. They just don't know that story. And what they see is, oh, this car in 1970 had a 454 in it. And then this one in 1973 had a 454. And in 1974, you could get a 455 and a Pontiac. And they think it's kind of the same thing. They don't realize, you know, what happened there. So I think these are educational displays. And you don't want to let the air out of it and tell people that, you know, well, this has a big block in it, but it really wasn't that great. Because in their eyes, it still is. It is cool.
Well, and you got to add the graphics and the spoilers and the scoops, and although they're different than what we remember from the 60s and the 70s, that was the happening thing back then. Take it, love it or hate it, they're cool. You know, a lot of those cars are really neat. You were saying, walking around that display last year and seeing the reaction and the amount of people that were sharing stories and, you know, talking about the one they had in high school and all that. It was just taking the hobby to a newer generation. We had a lot of fun with that. And that's something, we'll do something of that type from here on out with some kind of twist and some type of theme. I see that as, you know, a feature that we'll continue to hold over the next few years.
Well, that's a good thing. And I remember talking to somebody, I was drooling over that LTD2, which was blue with the red and orange stripe on it.
Yes.
And not really a high performance car in an engine performance standpoint, but visually was dynamite. And I was talking to somebody and they're like, why is this here? And it's like, you got to understand, at that point, the automakers were doing whatever they could to try and inject some excitement into these cars. And they were strangle-held, and they still pulled it off. This car is exciting.
Well, and what I have also seen, and I can add to that, is a lot of the big collectors are also recognizing that. And I reference back to the story of one of the cars that was in the display last year, and a gentleman who had just an absolutely show-stopping 77 Can-Am. And I'm sure you remember this car.
Oh, yeah.
Bar none, the best Can-Am that I've ever seen in my life. It was better than new. And the gentleman who showed that car was a regular with us. He has a beautiful collection of Pontiacs. He's out of the Phoenix area. He participates every year and usually has a Super Duty or a Ram Air Pontiac in the show. And when we had announced that we were doing that display last year, he called me up and he was so excited because he was neck deep in this restoration of this Can-Am. Come to find out, the long story was that was his first collector car when he was much younger. So that's what got him into the hobby.
Oh,
now,
cool.
You know, 20, 30 years later, he's an established collector. He decides he's going to get a Can-Am and he's going to have the best one in the world. Well, of course, all his buddies that are used to seeing him in his Ram Air Firebirds and his GTO judging it, they think he's lost his marbles because he's investing big money in a Can-Am. I mean, he was like new old stock, date-coated Goodyear steel guard tires, everything, just like you would a Ram Air Firebird or a GTO judge. But when we announced that, he said he printed out the email and took it to one of his buddies and stuffed it in the space and said, see that? I'm ahead of the curve this time.
Yeah. And those cars are hard to restore too, because they don't have
the
aftermarket following, and they rusted away, and people didn't hoard those parts away like they did, you know, Firebird parts. And
exactly. And when you look at the numbers, they're rare cars. You know, they've made about 1,500 of them. To do one at that level, as you say, it takes a lot of time, money, and effort to produce something that's going to be that quality. And I can guarantee you, he is ahead of the curve. You know, I'm sure he spent a whole lot of money to do it, but you look at some of the auction results for some of these cars now, and sure enough, they're bringing big money.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is fun to think back on some of those memories of those cars that, in my mind, I kind of filed away as cool cars, but I didn't file them as muscle cars. But today, it fit right in. So my best friend growing up, his next door neighbor had a 75 Cutlass. And it was maroon with the maroon, you know, cloth interior, buckets, console, white Lando top, T-tops, and a 350 four-barrel, you know, I guess, Rocket V8. And super stock two wheels, I guess. Beautiful car. And you know, at the time it was a cruiser. It wasn't, you know, a muscle car. It was just kind of a fun, cool cruiser. But today, that car would fit right in with that display that you're talking about and really stand tall, and people would get it, you know.
Well, and that's it. In the younger crowd, they're looking at those cars. Those are the cars that they remember. By younger, I say younger than me. But with that being said, I was born in 1960, so 1977 I had a triple black Sport Fury that let's say, one weekend when my parents were out of town, somehow I had a 446 pack dropped into it.
Whoops.
So
how did that get there?
By
there
accident.
Were some interesting things going on back then. You know, it's some people have heard me tell stories of the Black Ghost, and that's what I was out racing at the tail end of the time that the Black Ghost was out on Woodward out here in my neighborhood.
That's cool. So, okay, what about in the Mopar world as far as what we're going to see at the show?
Oh, a super neat display. And this is something you mentioned, that it's like I tell people that this year we may be as strong in Ford Mercury as we were last year at Mopar, but that's actually intentional because we don't want to be pigeonholed as being a specific mark show. We want to always be known as a diversified show that spotlights all of the big three, plus, as I always say, plus American Motors and Studebaker. So,
sure.
You know, while we will have a very strong showing of Ford Mercury, we will always have plenty to see when it comes to General Motors and Mopar. And to your point, this year around the Wellborn Muscle Car Museum area, we will have the evolution of the Performance Dodge Charger. So that, of course, is going to cover the years from 1966 to 1974. And our 74, one of our 74s we have is Richard Petty's 74 NASCAR racer. And we're talking a real deal car, not a clone or a tribute. So I've got a 66 426 Hemi Charger and, you know, several other Hemi cars. But again, there, I always enjoy these displays like that because they show the transition of the different body styles. And you can see, you know, the 66, 67, and you jump into the famous Coke bottle styling in the 68s, 70s, and then the 71 to 74, where you've got totally unique styling changes. But just a stellar group of cars that, like I often say, the best of the best coming from all over. So that's going to be a really fun Mopar display. And, you know, one of the areas where we always call you, and you're a major part of become part of the family with our premier unveilings for both of you guys now. And, even though we're maybe a little bit heavier in Ford and Mercury in the show overall, again, we have more Mopar unveilings than anything else.
Cool.
Well, being able to do those unveilings is a high point of my year. I will let you know it is an honor for me to be able to stand next to these fresh restorations and pull the cover off for the public for the first time and hear some of those stories firsthand about what makes this car special. So I don't take that lightly, and I get super excited about it. So thanks for allowing me to play along with that, because that's really special.
We're really honored to have both of you guys involved in that. Kevin, you've been with us, I think, since we started doing that. And, you know, some of these stories are just, you know, be ready. Have your tissues ready, because I'm telling you, some of the stories
right
this year again. We've got, you know, one, again, you know, something that's really a cool deal. We've got a gentleman by the name of David Sullivan, which some of you guys may have heard of. He's currently got a couple of shows running, both on Netflix and on Amazon. He's been in a number of movies and television shows over the last 15, 20 years. And he's one of those guys that's kind of funny. You know, you may not recognize his name, but when you see his face, you'll go, yeah, I know that guy. I remember seeing him on, you know, whatever show it was. You look up his resume on, you Google his name, and his resume is like page after page of different shows that he's been involved with. But he is going to be unveiling a 68.5 428 Cobra Jet Torino. And what's really neat, well, a couple of things are really neat, but one thing is it's a notchback. So it's a very, very unique car. But the best part of it is this car was his father's car, brand new. His dad ordered the car from the, from the dealership in Texas. And, you know, he used it for quite a few years. It was her family car. But then it was retired to the back 40 at their farm in Texas and sat there. It stayed in the family all along. But as David became more successful and had a few shekels in the bank here, he decided one day, he says, I'm going to bring that thing out, restore it back to the way it was when Dad first brought it home. And the good news is it's in Oklahoma right now being restored. They're just about finished with it. Sad news is Dad passed away. So he will not be there to see it, but David's bringing in his family. They're flying from all over the country. I mean, I guarantee you, this is, they're going to be tears shed. This is just, it's such an exciting, neat thing to be able to do. And, you know, Kevin, you'll be there because you'll be the only one that can keep your act together during it. Hiding behind somebody with wet eyes, and I'm telling you.
Well, I appreciate the heads up on that. So now I can start, you know, rehearsing. But at the same time, I'm to the point now where if it's going to flow, you just let it flow, man. Just be part of that. Well, I was tearing up last year when Zach Straits had his sister there, for crying out loud.
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly what I'm talking about. You know, in every one of these ones, you know, part of being chosen as an unveiling car is the car does have to have some kind of history or, you know, a great background story. And they all do.
One of the things that I've been looking forward to with this year's show is the military appreciation invitational that you're having.
Well, that again is something, you know, one of our staff members, and I mentioned it before, the Coulson family that I was talking about that handles our outdoor move-in. This was something that they brought to the table to me, and they we do Military Appreciation Day on Sunday, where allow
right.
all members of the military, past and present, free admission on Sunday. There's no catches, no fine
nice.
Print. It's like, if you have ID, if it's on your driver's license or military ID card, we have a check-in desk. Come over, you show that to us, you get the ticket, you're getting it for free. Just a small...
That's so great.
Just a small token of our appreciation. And, you know, we were talking about that, and Brent had said to me, you know, a couple years ago, you did a Vietnam veteran display, because that was really neat. We thought that was cool. What do you think about expanding on that? That kind of taking the military appreciation theme and inviting some past members and current members of the military to show their cards. And I thought, how cool is that? that's a great idea.
Oh, yeah.
There are so many enthusiasts that are in our hobby that, you know, I've heard the stories, and I'm sure you have heard the stories also. That's what got people through back in the 60s and 70s, was that dream of coming home and having some cash in their pocket so they could go buy a GTO or a Roadrunner. You know, that is some of the stories that have been shared through our show. So we will have a block of cars. It's a real diversified group. I mean, we've got a 63 Polara in there with a Max Wedge in it. All the way up, I've got a CTSB wagon 2012 with a stick,
ooh,
which is, you know, modern muscle at its finest. And again, there, you know, different generations of military members. The gentleman with the Cadillac is currently a military member, where the guy with the 63 is a Vietnam veteran. So we're, excited about that. I think it'll be fun, and it's just a neat way that we can all show some appreciation for what these guys have done, the sacrifices they have made, their family have made.
You know, it's funny if you think about it. Even if you don't make that a formalized thing, I would say a solid 35% to 40% of the cars on display have a military tie-in anyway.
Yes.
You know, so they're already there. So it's just nice to recognize them.
Absolutely.
So that's cool. I've talked to Mike about this before. I have a neighbor across the street from me who is the guy you were talking about. He was a Vietnam vet. He got wounded in Vietnam. Before he went in, he was fortunate enough to buy a 68 Roadrunner, and his parents didn't think he was coming home. And when he came home, his car was gone.
Ugh.
And, you know, one of those stories. It's horrible. And I've been trying to get him to come with me up to the show this year. So I'm not making any promises, but if I introduce you to a guy named Ralph, that's who he
that
is.
That would be awesome. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got all the unveilings, you've got all the different theme displays. We talked a little bit about each one of the, you know, the major brands. One thing that we don't talk about a whole lot are the Corvettes, and that's a big part of the show.
Absolutely. Just earlier today, I was on the phone with Kevin McKay as we were dialing in what we call our Corvette Legends display. You know, Corvettes will always be a part of the show, and you know, our emphasis is always on 60s and 70s muscle. And in the Corvette world, we're really focused mostly on the C1s, 2s, 3s, and 4s, but there's always a few of the newer ones mixed in also. But This year in our Corvette Legends, we're doing a Cars of Sebring display. And these are all cars that actually raced at Sebring Race and have extensive race history. And again, you know, I like to emphasize that these are real deal cars. They're, you know, we've got a 58, and it was raced in 1958.
We've
got a sticker.
That is so cool.
That raced at Sebring and raced at Le Mans. It's so neat to be able to talk to the owners of these cars because they do such an extensive amount of research. And, you know, being real cars, there's always great stories around them. So I encourage our spectators, don't be afraid to jump in and ask questions and, you know, participate, because we all love to talk about our cars, especially people that have cars like that. They're more than willing to share the stories and the history to tell you why their cars are so special.
Well, and again, that's the reality, is that's why we have a lot of these cars, is because we do enjoy sharing them and, you know, telling people about them. And sometimes if the person's not even listening, you know, I saw Q-Ball here chasing some guy down the hallway of a grocery store yelling about his GTO, and the guy's just like, let me get out of here. But no, he was going to tell him all about it.
He really wanted to hear about it.
I could tell.
I'll bet.
Especially your transmission leak. He was riveted.
Yeah, right. All right. Don't give away all my secrets.
Yeah. I remember hearing that Mr. Peter Brock is going to be there. Is he still on?
He absolutely is. It's, you know, we're different than a lot of shows, especially when it comes to indoor shows. And that, you know, we're not into the wrestlers or the TV reality show people or that type of thing. And not to say there's anything wrong with that. That's great, but it's just not what we're all about. But when we get the opportunity to spend some time with real, you know, the actual movers and shakers from back in the day, it's just so neat. And Peter Brock, I mean, played such a big part, not only in the Shelby world as he's known now, but also in the Corvette world. You're talking about Corvettes.
Oh, yeah.
He could be credited, along with Larry Shinoda, for the split window Corvette. I mean, his 57 SS, which was solely his design as a concept car, that is the car that evolved to be the 63 split window Corvette that we all know and love now. And boy, is he a storyteller. I mean,
oh, he's
we're
unbelievable.
Have him do a panel discussion, and his wife Gail been, I don't know how long they've been married, but she's been there for the whole ride also. She's an incredibly interesting person also. So I asked him if they would spend some quality time on our stage, share some stories. And he said, well, what do you want me to talk about? And I said, Peter, I want you to talk about anything you want to talk about, because there's so much you can say. And he just kind of laughed. He said, yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. So you guys know, when we can do that, guys like Peter Brock and some of the drag racers and the racers we've had over the years, it's just so neat to hear these stories from these people. It's, and then, you know, talking about special guests, I just confirmed this week we have another gentleman by the name of Camillo Pardo.
Oh, yeah, from Ford. Yeah, designer, big time.
Camillo is the designer of the second generation Ford GT, the 2004 to 2006 design. And we have a big Ford GT display coming together also with some really unique items. But I've known Camillo for quite a few years, and I've done work with him through the Concours of America here in Detroit, Nissan Design. And I thought, how cool would it be to really take the display over the top and to get Camillo here and talk about, you know, the actual design process and how that whole thing came together back in, you know, late 1990s when it started. And he's the guy. He is the guy who designed that Ford GT. So he's another one of our special guests we've got coming.
Well, yeah, and what an amazing handoff from Brock.
And they're good friends, too. So it was kind of funny because when I first talked to Camillo about coming, he looked at his calendar and he said, well, gee, that's Formula One weekend in Vegas. And I said, yeah. And I said, Camillo, let me tell you how important our show is. Peter Brock lives in Las Vegas, and he'll be joining us at our show. He was like, really? Said, yep. Right after I got off the phone, I immediately called Gail Brock and said, I need some help. Got to tell Camillo. He's got to come out. So I think there's a Gibson steak dinner involved somewhere in that field.
Oh, I would hope so. Yeah, yeah. Well, a few years ago, at the SEMA show, I was hosting the SEMA Central stage, and Peter Brock happened to be kind of walking by, and I grabbed him for an impromptu interview, which turned into about 20 minutes of him telling stories. Yeah. And I was just like frozen in time, you know, to hear all of his racing stories and then going on to BRE and racing the Datsuns after Shelby, and then beating all those guys with a Datsun, and the story of the 510 being a race car is just such a phenomenal story. The short version is Datsun wanted to sell some cars, so they had this sporty little, 240 Z car, and they're like, yeah, let's make a great race car, let's road race it. And he's like, what about that little square thing over there? Let's beat people with that. Because if you can beat people with that, you're going to sell cars. And that's what happened. Oh, yeah, I love that guy.
And then, even now, here he is, I don't know exactly how old he is, but obviously back in the 60s doing things, even as far back as the 50s. Sharp as a tack, and even now he's still designing. He will tell you, his whole thing is design. To this day, he's designing. He came up with a better idea for a car hauling trailer, a phenomenal project that he did.
His aero hauler.
He's an amazing, entertaining guy and a real gentleman, a really nice, down-to-earth guy.
Yeah, yeah, he is. It's, he's kind of cut from that same cloth as Paul Newman, I think. They're very, they've got that aura. Yep. When I was working at Hot Rod, a photographer, Randy Lorenzen, who was doing a lot of work for Hot Rod, he and I were at a studio late one night. He was shooting photos of a feature car, and he said he had just got back from Detroit, and he was hanging out with Mr. Pardo. And I said, what were you working on? And he's like, well, I can't really tell you. And then he broke down and he's like, but I might be able to show you something. And he did all the press photography of the Ford GT. And I got to see, Randy does these elaborate setups, overhead shots and a lot of cool props and a lot of color and stuff. And it was really neat to see. And that was my introduction to that car before it was, an actual car. So Camillo's another great storyteller. That'd be a...
He is, and I'll tell you another little bit of insight of something that you're going to see in that display. Got a gentleman, there's actually two guys that are putting that together for us, and one of them is known as GT guy here in Detroit. He has a shop that is exclusively works on second, third generation Ford GTs. And he was a Roush employee and had his hands on about every one of those cars when they were being built. But he somehow was able to purchase one of the test mule cars. Mm-hmm. And he's going to bring that along. If some of you might have seen the poster picture on Facebook, and it's a raw, gray, it's not pretty, but it is an actual test mule, number 5. It's a running, driving vehicle, and has never been shown to the public anywhere at any time.
So that's like
an exclusive in our display. And again, the neat thing is that Rich will be there right next to explain what this car is and why it looks the way it is, show you all the unique features and the things of what ended up being the production model later on right beside it. So it's another, we like to do things that are kind of outside of the box. And my goal for the show has always been to present something where when you leave the show, you look at your watch and go, holy, I've been here 6 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Got your money's worth. You go in and think you can see it in a couple hours, and it's, 5, 6, 7 hours later, you're wishing you could spend another couple hours.
Or 18 or 24 or whatever it is. We've Well, that's super cool. I'm very excited about being there again and seeing everything. Following the Facebook page and the website, mckacken.com. Check it out. If you've never been, you need to go. I'm not kidding. This is you literally owe it to yourself to go to this event if you've not. And the other thing that is really riveting is our trivia questions here on the V8 Radio podcast. And I know everybody thinks the McCacken show is great, but they really want to know the answers to these crappy questions. So, you guys remember all that stuff?
Absolutely. Yep.
All right, let's go through these here. So, Bob, you asked us how many different states are the partners, the McCacken partners from?
And, right.
Kevin said, he said seven different states, and I said five. So what's the answer?
The real answer is eight. There are eight members from eight different states.
Wow, that's cool.
And I have to be honest with you, Kevin, you were kind of right, because Mr. Guaris, who was from Illinois, and Mr. Bimby, who currently a resident of Illinois.
Yeah.
Mr. Guaris recently moved to Arizona.
He's a transplant. Yeah, so there you go.
So we can give you a point for that. But technically, their driver's licenses all have different states on.
All right. Well, close enough. That's a great question. Very cool. Good to know. All right, Mikey, what did you have?
All right, so I asked you boys, what was the VW Beetle called when it was initially imported into the United States?
Oh, man.
And Bob said Kubelwagen.
Right.
And
I did.
First, Kevin said junk, but then he settled on type 1.
I mean, that's what
and
some
the
people
actual
say.
Answer is, the VW was called the Victory Wagon when it was first imported into the U.S.
Oh, they played off VW and changed it to Victory Wagon?
Das Victory Wagon.
And that was quickly pointed out to them to not be true.
Right, pretty much.
Well, I think that's what happened. I think as a marketing ploy, you can't come from a country that didn't win the war and say you're driving the Victory Wagon.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a great point, actually.
Point taken.
I think that's what happened. That's a good question, too.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I had asked you gentlemen, who made the three following vehicles, the Lynx, the Minx, and the Manx? And Bob guessed the Mercury Lynx, of course, the Myers Manx Dune Buggy. You've had one of those at the McCacken show, right?
We did,
Yeah. And then your guess was the Plymouth Minx, which was interesting. And then Q-Ball said the Mercury Lynx, the Myers Manx, and the Minx came from our friends at Studebaker. Well, both of you chaps are two-thirds correct. It was, of course, the Mercury Lynx and the Myers Manx, but the Minx is a British car made by Hillman. It was the Hillman Minx.
Okay.
Hillman.
Yeah, nobody really cares, but it's a good trivia question.
It makes for a great question.
Makes for a nice triplet there, the Lynx, Minx, and Manx, you know?
Yeah, true.
All right.
Right on. Well, going, everyone. We all got them wrong.
How about that? Yes. The triple toilet L's. Right there. Yeah. But again, the Muscle Car and Corvette National is a show you have to go to. Check it out online. We'll see. What are the dates again?
We're November 18th and 19th, which is Saturday from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
And realistically, you can't afford to go to the Formula One race, so go to Chicago.
Absolutely. And get a two-day pass because you're going to want to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I always tell people is that it's the weekend before Thanksgiving, and it's consistent every year, so it's easy
Correct.
To remember.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, Bob. Well, listen, we really appreciate you hanging in with us and sharing all this preview info. It's great stuff. I'm all jazzed up. I was telling Q-Ball before that in my world, I have a lot going on, so sometimes I compartmentalize a little bit, and I don't think about the things that are in the future. And then sometimes when the event actually happens, I tend to trip over it and go, oh, man, I missed some of that anticipation. But having this conversation right now is really getting me excited well in advance of the show, which is fun. So thank you for doing all that.
All right. Thank you for letting me spread the word. And as I say, our best advertising for this is those who have been to the show. I can go on and on all day, as I often do. But you really need to see it and experience it in person and interact with the people and talk to the owners. Come and and be a part of it.
Heck yeah. All right. So that's all I got. How about you, Mr. Q?
That is all I have, and I am so looking forward to this year's McCacken Show. I think I missed the first one, but after I realized what happened, I have not missed a show since.
So here's a fun trivia question. A little bit of trivia there is that the McCacken Show is where Mr. Q-Ball and I met in person for the first time.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's right.
How did that happen? Were you working, Mike, or were you... just a spectator, or how did that happen?
Yeah, I was just a spectator. I was pretty prolific on the V8 TV forums back when that was still a thing. Uh-huh. And I knew that they were going to be at the McCacken Show. So I said, well, let's go out there and say hello and meet them.
So oh,
that
cool.
Year, we had two cars on display that year, the reloaded Camaro and the rowdy Firebird. And Mark Stilo was right behind us with his Red Witch Camaro.
Yeah.
And I think Mike was coming out to see if the cars that we built looked as good in person as they did in pictures, or if we were full of crap.
And I was not disappointed.
Are you sure he wasn't just a stalker?
Yeah, well, he's doing good at it because, you know, we ended up hiring him.
Great stalker.
It worked.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, he stays at my house every month now. So
yeah, right. I quasi live in Redbud now, or in Waterloo now.
Beautiful.
Yeah. All right, friends. Well, this has been the V8 Radio Podcast. If you like the show, hit that subscribe button and tell your friends. Spread it around. You know, it doesn't cost you anything, for crying out loud. Just hit share, right? And for Mr. Bob Ashton and Mr. Mike Q-Ball Clark, I'm Kevin Oste, reminding you to show up at the McCacken Show, and we'll bring some V8 Radio stickers and give them to you in person. How about that? There's an offer.
Hey.
And keep the shiny side up, and we will talk to you next time on V8 Radio.
See you there.